Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Drunk women solving crime.
Drunk women.
Drunk women solving crime.
Drunk women.
Now it's time for Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Hello!
Ooh, hello! Oh, we like this already. This is good. We're usually in my front room and nobody's clapping except up here. And now it's for real. Ladies, welcome. I just said ladies. We'll welcome the gentlemen too. All right, you got me. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the very first Drunk Women Solving Crime Live. Woo! Oh, we love you. I'm not worried about you at all. I was afraid you'd be like, hello, we're very English. And we're just going to get quiet. Although saying this might make you go quiet. Thank you so much for coming along. It's so American to start a show by being a little bit sentimental. But honestly, we thought of this silly idea. We were sitting in a pub, would you believe it? We had a great, great title that Katie had been holding on to for like 10 years. I don't know what this is, but it's going to be something. And we just couldn't have imagined that in such a short amount of time that so many people would listen to it and then we'd get a response. So thank you. We are all writers. We're used to rejection. So this feels kind of nice. Thank you. I'm Taylor Glenn. I'm going to be hosting this first episode. So I would like to introduce my sidekicks here. We've got Hannah George to my left.
Hello.
And to my right, we've got Katie Wilkins.
Yay!
That's me.
So what is Drunk Women Solving Crime? Guys, this is where ouzo meets organized crime. It's where moonshine meets money laundering. And it's where limoncello meets lethal injections. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. We solve listener crimes at the end of every episode, and tonight we get to solve some audience crimes. Now, for the first one, we asked on Twitter for you to send your crimes in. Thank you. We have someone in the audience who has sent in their crime. And if that's not incentive enough, you get a prize. You get your very own bottle of Unicorn Tears Gin. Thank you so much to Firebox for sending us all the Unicorn Tears Gin. We will enjoy all of it. Great. Well, without further ado, I'd like to introduce our guest for this episode. It is the comedian, author, all-around legend, Jenny Eclair.
I'm 38 years in show business. It comes to this. Hello. Hello,
to the Pleasance Theatre and the podcast people. It's all very newfangled. Anyway, I bought a notebook. I'm really excited about this. I love this podcast. I think most of them are rubbish, by the way. But, oh, people just go on, don't they? Nah, 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 nah. This has got content and a narrative. So I bought my notebook.
I love that you brought a notebook.
Yeah, this is serious.
And you joke that it's come to this, but hello, this is a velour tablecloth. So, we've pulled out some stops. Jenny, thank you so much for being here. You know, our job really is to act like this is no big deal. Like, yeah, Jenny, Claire is here, whatever. It's just what we do. But like inside of my head, it's just like, Jenny, Claire, sat in that chair. She's right over there. Hey.
I can only let you down.
What's going to happen if we get a guest that's like got a name that doesn't rhyme with anything, like Jason Orange, for example? he wouldn't be invited on, would he? Because he's a bloke.
Jason Orange.
Right, Jenny.
Ooh, my minge is the thing that rhymes with orange. My minge.
That's sorted then.
Anyway, come on.
I like how you said that like as a gang member, like my minge. I got up to some trouble with my minge.
Oh, when you get to my age, the minge is the most troublesome part of the body. I can never decide whether it's the minge or the feet that give me the most jip. But anyway, it's not a medical show, it's a crime show.
I thought you meant that you couldn't tell them apart. I was like, oh. Jenny, can you kick us right off and let us know, have you ever been the victim of
I have
crime?
Sat both sides of crime. I have committed and been committed against. I think I'm quite gullible and stupid. When I was committing crime, I was
What did you do?
Oh, I was a shoplifter.
Okay.
It took me a long time to grow out of it, to be quite honest.
What ages were you shoplifting?
Well, I started when I was about 12. I was very short-sighted, very clumsy shoplifter. It took me a long time to grow out of stealing money from my mother's purse as well.
Wow.
I think I was about 43. And she'd just leave it there. And I think, well, you're just leaving it there. Obviously, I'm going, oh, look, there's a little fiver. I'll just have that. Anyway, don't tell her. So, crimes that have been committed against me. Well, on a daily basis, I mean, people rob off me all the time. I'm robbed against. You know, people take jobs I should have. I watch the television. And I think, what's he doing? Hosting an afternoon chat show or a quiz show? That should be my job. I'd like that job. Nice little sit-down afternoon job. That's my kind of job. And then I buy things, stupid things on the internet, don't I? So... This is my latest crime that was committed against me. Do come in, you're quite late. She's quite late in a very noisy coat. I'd be mortified. A late comer in a noisy coat. I'd have shed my coat on the steps, I really would. Anyway, we're talking about this. Okay, so you can either have this garment, which is my evidence that I've bought, or you can have my carjacking tale. Carjacked by knife boy. Anyway, I'll quickly do this.
We need both of those tales.
I think we can fit that into.
Okay, right.
I love that. I've got a dress.
Okay, well, this, right. I bought this off. It's not good podcast material, this.
We'll take a photo.
No, we'll take a photo
right,
of it.
Okay,
don't
worry. Well, what it was.
You're the first guest to bring evidence. Very,
yeah, I love this.
Very stupid woman. I thought something popped up on my Instagram and it looked like a pink, dusty pink linen smock. Caftan smock with heavy embroidery all down the front, down the yoke. And I thought, well, that is a glorious thing. And, you know, not too clingy, good heavy linen. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this piece of shit turned up. Well, you can fit. Now, lady with the crinkly coat, now you can feel that quite. Well, And obviously, I thought, well, I'll send it back. I'll get the money back. It was about 38 quid. And, of course, there was no resend address or anything. I was done. Ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, I am a daft woman. Once, right, I lent a lady cab driver 500 quid for IVF.
What? Wait, yeah, I'll say it for all of us. What? What, Jenny?
Listen, I don't know how it happened. I hadn't even drunk a drop, but anyway, she spanned me this story. Oh. And I mean, if anybody wants this top, by the way, I really don't want to take it back home with me tonight. Actually, I might use that again for something else. Who knows? I might be on another podcast. Are you allowed to recycle material? Anyway, I'd lent this woman £500 for so she could have a baby. And I never saw
a
penny of that.
Where did you get this cab?
From my house in Camberwell.
Camberwell?
Yeah.
There's a Camberwell cab driver said, by the way, I want to have IVF. Have you got £500?
It was a slightly longer car journey than that. It was from Camberwell to the Oval. By the time we were halfway, I was crying in the back of the car because she spun me the story.
Wow.
I should have known
that
she was a con artist because Jo Brand always, because she used to live around the area as well.
Yeah.
She's Dulwich now. She's done very well for herself. Guess where I am still? I'm still in SE5. Oh, it's all gone horribly wrong. Anyway, Jo, when she was living in Camberwell, she used to refer to the Camberwell cars as the Camberwell Liars.
Wow.
And so I should have known. Anyway, so then I was carjacked as well by knife point.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, that, I had this car, right, and I was picking our Phoebe up. Now, Phoebe's 29 now, and this must have been about 22 years ago, and she's about 7. Hey, I did the math, as you would say, Taylor. And she was at a kids' party, right, and it was in Battersea, and she had some homework that I had to do, obviously, because I have control issues. And I love a project. You know when your kid gets a project and you think, yes, yes, I'm going to spend the entire weekend making a Tudor manor house. I cannot wait. So anyway, it had to be a project about a dead person. So I thought, Princess Diana. Princess Diana.
Oh, my God, that would have been, like, the year she died. Like, I'm almost the same age as your daughter, and I'm like, no, was it 97? Like, she died in 97.
Yeah, she died in 97.
Yes. Oh, yes, it was quite deep. Anyway, maybe the project was recently dead. But anyway, so I got
how
to
macabre
this...
is that for her primary school? Has anyone got a grandma that hasn't made it?
I bought to this book, and it was in the boot of my car, and I was waiting for her to finish this party, and I thought, oh, I'm a bit bored, so I'll go and read the Princess Diana book, so I'm ready to do the project. And so I went to my boot, got the book, got back in the car, and there was a man sat in my passenger seat. Well,
wow.
He was ever so good looking. I went, well, hello. Slow, really slow. And then I looked down and I thought, why has he brought a potato peeler into my car?
Oh,
and suddenly I realised
no.
It wasn't a potato peeler. Ooh. It was a flashing blade, ladies and gentlemen. A flashing blade. And he said, give me your car keys or else I'll slash you. Oh,
Jesus.
I thought, no, I'm not having that. And I had my keys in my hand because I've just opened my boot. So I ran. I got out of the car and I ran to the house where the party was.
Oh.
And I was in a massive panic and I had this massive gold ring on. And I put my fist through the door. You know, one of those Victorian...
Oh, my God.
So there's this party of seven-year-olds and they're all... dancing to Steps or whatever it was in your day, and then all they can see is a fist coming through the thing. They turn around, the knife-wielding maniac is coming up the garden path.
Oh my god.
Somebody's about to open the door, so the knife-wielding maniac can then be in the house with the seven-year-olds. I've made a mess of this, haven't I?
Oh my god.
So then he's going, throw the keys, and I threw the keys and he caught them.
That's kind of cool.
Which
that's
was annoying.
Kinda like 80s movie.
You know, it's one of those things where he went, oh, damn it. You caught the keys. And then he was in my car and I was so angry. I chased him then and he stalled the car and I thought, you're a fucking idiot. You can't even drive it. Because my mum's old poundy, you know, it wasn't anything much. And I tried to kick the windscreen in. I got into kicking glass mode now. So I was going like that, right? Trying to kick the windscreen in. But I just had pumps on, it was useless, and he just drove off. And then they caught him, get this, right?
Wow.
They caught him. And I went for a lineup at Brixton Nick. Guess what? I got the wrong bloke.
No.
Yeah, I got away with it. Got scot free. Yeah. Can't be
How
trusted
do you know
me.
You got the wrong bloke.
Because they told me afterwards, copper told me. I said, was it him? Was it him? I know it was him. I know it was him. I saw him. He went, yeah, you picked the wrong man.
Oh. But how do they know who did it, though?
Because they know. Oh, he had form. He'd been caught in the car.
Oh, okay.
Also, yeah. It's like a lineup is like you have the one guilty guy and four guys that look a bit like him.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not like four guys that could have done it, which is really nice. Like, I love that that's what you think a lineup is.
Yeah. And he had a distinguishing feature.
That's my bad.
He had a distinguishing feature. So he had a mole on his cheek, but they covered it up with a plaster. Ooh. And there are all these.
Why
boys.
Did they do that?
Because he can't say that's the fella just because he's got the mole on his cheek.
But that's...
Well, I'm thinking about this now, thinking that's how it should have been, but it wasn't. They all had a plaster on their cheek.
Maybe they had the plasters on the cheeks just as, like, because that used to be sort of a gang symbol. Maybe it was like, my minge, you know?
You just want to use my minge over and over
again.
Now.
I did. It's true.
So those are my... That's, I'm scraping the surface there. There's some
I'm
of mine.
I'm so sorry that you got that awful crimes. Shirt. Oh. It's really a little trauma.
That was the one that caused me the most trauma,
well,
of course.
Now, one thing that we always ask is if this perpetrator were here, what would you say to them?
Well, I'd hang him by his testicles. Then, you know, words would be meaningless.
So, like, in this, you're hanging them by their testicles. How do you imagine it? Because I imagine it's sort of like he's there and then he's sort of quite beautifully sort of laying back and he's being hung by his testicles. Like,
he's going to have a really serene face.
Yeah, I just think, like, how do you picture it?
I picture it ugly.
Yeah. And then do you say anything to him when he's upside down?
Well, I might. I think it'd be quite good to force feed him the Princess Diana book, wouldn't it? So like that, just page by page.
Oh, yeah. I like this.
Eat that's homework.
Good. I like
that's
this.
Kind of a new art project in itself.
You've made me realize we have to ask more than what would you say. It's like, what would you do or say?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to talk.
Which body part would you string them up from?
Yeah. Yes.
Right. Jenny, thank you so much. That was a good way to kick us off. Right, are we ready to get into the true crime section?
Yes.
Our podcast.
Actually, yeah.
Okay, you guys. Does anyone refill as you want to? You guys, our case begins with a person. Are you riveted?
Okay, person.
Our case begins
with... You're writing it down.
Jenny's written person.
I've written person down and I've underlined it.
We're off.
Our case begins with a person who was born to a farmer and lived in a rural area. They showed early signs of criminal tendencies, mostly petty theft. And when they start their first job working for a local family, the thefts continue, resulting in termination of employment. Instead of taking another job, they continue stealing and eventually become a con artist. So one of our favorite questions to ask, just to test our unconscious bias, do we think this is a man or a woman?
I think it's a woman. I think it might be my Camberwell cab art.
Ooh,
we don't know what period this is.
We don't.
We don't yet.
Well, I do.
There you go.
I'd say woman.
Okay. Any?
Yeah,
any
I think I would like
that?
It to be a woman because a woman con artist. Since I saw Ocean's Women, as we call it here, I think a female con artist. I can really get behind.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go man to be different.
Just to be different.
Yeah.
All right. It is indeed a woman.
Ah. Wow.
Born.
I'm giving myself.
I love
a tick.
That. Literally, when the criminals are women, everyone's yes.
Jenny's marking her up.
We try so hard not to get on board with all of them. I don't know if you will get on board with this one, but we'll see. Born Mary Harker, her first job was as a domestic servant. Mary soon marries a man that she's only known for 3 weeks called Jason Bateman.
What?
I read that wrong. The star of Arrested Development. No wonder you'd marry him in 3 weeks. It's John Bateman. I'm sorry. Could be a distant relative. Oh my God, what a Freudian slip. I'm so in love with Jason Bateman. Okay. John Bateman. John Bateman works as a wheelwright. That's someone who builds and repairs wooden wheels. So Mary, now known as Mary Bateman, has 4 children with John. I love that you're taking notes, Jenny. Absolutely love it. You brought evidence. You brought a notebook.
She's a serious detective.
She's a fucking detective.
I really wish I could do shorthand at this point.
Okay, so 4 children with John, but they have to keep moving frequently because of Mary's criminal activities. The girl just can't stop stealing. They move into a place called Marsh Lane where Mary starts working as a dressmaker, and John goes, phew. Doesn't last long, though. Okay, so where and when Let's start with when. What time period are
wooden
we talking
wheels,
about? Wooden wheels.
Wooden wheels. Dressmakers. Mm-hmm. Who lives in a time like this? Katie, it's over to you. I don't know.
I'm going to go 1880.
I thought you were going to say the 80s.
I'm going to 1884.
Oh, good guess.
I'm going to go similarly, okay, just before the turn of the century. So late 1800s.
Like Victorian. Yeah.
Late Victorian.
Or like the Isle of Wight now, of course.
Good stuff. Jenny, you are just spot on. All of this is happening right around the turn of the century into 1800. Well done.
Yeah.
Mary was actually born in 1768. They moved to Marsh Lane in 1799. Now, any guess about where we are? What country are we in?
Say some of the names of the places again.
Marsh Lane.
So there's marshes.
And there's a wheelwright.
Suffolk.
Dressmakers.
Suffolk.
Ooh, you're going very specific.
They're peculiar in Suffolk. All the lowlands, all the flatlands.
Any other ideas?
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like it's
Norfolk. America. I'm going Norfolk, sorry. Ooh. I'm rivals with Jenny.
I'm close, prepared to agree that you could be right.
I think I'm saying American because you're American. You're saying it in your voice, so I would make an incredible detective.
It just sounds really American.
Thanks for making me feel a little bit at home. We are in England. We are, ooh, in England. We're actually in Leeds.
Oh, I'm, yeah, closer.
Mash.
Oh my God. Coming up on ITV, it's the Folk Wars.
If you'd said he was a wheelwright and she were a dressmaker,
yeah,
then we'd have known.
Oh, don't worry. You'll all hear me trying to do the accent in a moment. Not content with working as a dressmaker, Mary begins working as a con artist, which allows her to swindle people more easily without getting caught stealing, the punishment for which is hanging. Question, how do we think she cons people? What is her game?
Jenny?
She says she's going to make them a party frock. And they give her all the money for the party frock, for all the stuff and ribbons and gewgaws. And she runs off with the money.
That is a very good guess. I like that. Based on the evidence. Anything else? Any other ideas?
Oh, she goes around to their houses, right, for a dress fitting. And she steals all the silver. She's great. I love Mary.
The thing that whenever I've done research for like cases and stuff, cases from around this area, if you've got a female con artist, a lot of the time it's promising a guy some sexy time and then he'll take his clothes off. You steal the clothes. Mm. It's proper like cartoonish. And then you run off with them and you're like, give me 20 quid and you can have your clothes back.
Ooh.
So I think it's that.
Nice. I like all these.
I like that someone went, yeah, literally.
Yes.
It actually, here's a hint, it had to do with the beliefs at the time around health and wellness.
Oh, it's some kind of medicine.
So guys, this is the case of Mary Bateman, a.k.a. the Witch of Yorkshire.
Witch.
Ooh.
Very well-known case, although I knew fuck all about it, so let's do this. Mary begins making money by telling people that she possesses...
Magical powers,
supernatural powers, and the ability to heal with various spells and potions. She's basically the Gwyneth Paltrow of her time. She makes money fortune telling and selling her potions, some of which are thought to have poisoned the customers. Specifically, it's believed that Mary poisoned two Quaker sisters who lived above their drapery shop in St. Peter's Square in Quarry Hill, Leeds.
Oh, the rivals, if they're doing dressmaking too.
Yeah, that's right. You call that dusty pink? <You're> dead. Although Mary was questioned about their death, she replied, they caught the bubonic plague.
That's a great excuse in those days.
That's a great excuse.
Oh,
yeah.
You could have the fuck you wanted.
No. Let's just imagine a time where that's a credible alibi. Like, yeah. They got the plague. Oh, yeah.
That's a lot of stab wounds.
Yeah.
And it's like plaguey ones.
The plague will win that out every time. Question, did she get away with these crimes of poisoning the Quaker sisters?
I think she got away with those two silly sisters. Yeah. Plaguey sisters.
Silly sisters.
Yeah, those she stupid did. Quaker bitches. Yeah.
That was the phrase I was after.
See,
we like to pull quotes from the episodes and put them online.
The stupid,
we'll be like,
stupid Quaker bitches.
Jenny Eclair.
Yeah. Jenny is Team Mary.
She's very Team Mary. Are you Team Mary, Katie?
I'm not not yet decided. Do I have to pick now?
No, you don't. I just wondered if you had a certain feel. Are you team Mary?
I mean, I don't know. I don't like homeopathy now, which I feel is quite sort of a bit like this. Do you know what I mean? In terms of her sort of having her...
I'm very into all that.
Oh, dear.
Are you?
Yeah, muck and magic. Muck and magic. You can muck and magic me anytime you like. Yeah. I'll take a potion. Yeah.
All right. She does get away with the crime. Of course she gets away with this one. And she loots their house and takes all their shit. Of
really?
Course.
Oh. Wow. Of course.
Now, Mary was also very skilled at creating hoaxes in... Sorry, I really like this part. In 1806, she staged a spectacle which became known as the Prophet Hen of Leeds, which was a chicken that laid eggs that foretold the end of days. Mary would charge the villagers to come and witness the hen laying eggs, and upon each egg that would emerge from the hen was written, "Christ is coming."
Wow.
Like Easter just got fun again. Christ is coming.
God.
I feel like she should have
She's
been a
great.
Little bit... She that I love this, I really yeah. do. But like write it in Latin or something. Like don't be so like, "Christ is coming." Yeah.
So wait, so the chicken had the eggs and then she like got a biro out and was like, "Christ is..."
Oh, well, this is the question. The villagers believed that doomsday was on its way, and you kind of would.
No one could read apart from her. How do they know what this says?
Could have said, "This is a very nice egg."
I think that's why she wrote in bubble letters, "Christ is coming." My question is, how did she manage to get a hen to lay eggs that said "Christ is coming"?
Because it came magic, because she was magic. She was a witch. Were you not listening?
Like,
you would have died so quickly in the 17th century, Jenny. You'd just be like straight up dead. Like before.
Right, I've got to think about this one.
So biro pen, no biros, but
did she write it in their own shit? I mean, but like...
Magic
it's like,
hen
I'm just,
shit.
What, that was genuinely supposed to be like a clever
answer.
It's
got to be like a sleight of hand trick, right? Because you can't put an egg back up a chicken.
God knows she's tried.
So
she would have
like a prepared egg.
Yes, of course.
And it'd swap it out.
It'd be under the nest. Yeah. Dig deep in the nest.
Yeah.
And then she'd written some in ash.
Yeah.
The Christ is coming. In the words like, "Christ is coming."
So
I support this.
You can't shove an egg back up a chicken, can't you, Katie? Can't
oh,
you?
No.
Remember, this is Gwyneth Paltrow. She's shoving stuff up all
and
over
on
the place.
Vegan day.
I said minges were always trouble. Minge and feet.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what big wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
And if you're enjoying this live edition of Drunk Women Solving Crime, then why not come to a live show yourself? The next one is on the 6th of December 2018 at the Pleasance Theatre in London. And special guests for that night will be Susie Ruffle, and back by popular demand, it's London Hughes. And you could win a bottle of Unicorn Tears gin worth £40. Thanks very much to Firebox for sending those. Now, let's get back to this episode of Drunk Women Solving Crime. And I think we're just about to find out if you can put an egg back up inside a chicken.
She wrote on the eggs in acid and then she would put them back up the oviduct of the hen.
I can't believe I was so naive.
Yeah, I bet you feel stupid now, Katie. Well, I thought she wrote them in their own shit.
Of course you could.
She's got a vivid imagination, this one, hasn't she?
I mean, I'm with you now, Jack. I really like her. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, detectives. Strap
detectives.
Up now.
Detectives.
Yeah. There was an incident for which Mary became best known, even bigger than the Jesus chicken.
Oh, God.
Pay attention.
I've got a new Edinburgh show, I've decided. I've got a new character.
Oh, my God, that poster.
I am Mary Bateman. Go on. What's she do now?
Oh, my God. Pay attention. There's literally a quiz later. All right.
Oh, Jenny's going to win the quiz.
Now, this involved a couple called William and Rebecca Perrigo, who lived in Bramley. Rebecca had been suffering from a fluttering in the chest and psychological problems, so she had reported these to a Dr. Kersley, who said he couldn't help her, of course. Such a Dr. Kersley thing to do. But she explained to him that she was haunted by a black dog and other spirits, and Rebecca's niece suggested that she go to Mary to rid her of the spirits. So they meet outside a pub called the Black Dog. Seriously.
Okay.
What a slap in the face. What a way to start. Like, my sister-in-law is having hallucinations about a black dog. Like, well, then let's meet at the Black Dog. That's just not good bedside manner, Mary.
It could have been that. Good job it wasn't the hen and chickens. That would be even worse.
It's like that thing of, like, whatever you're scared of, do it. Pee into the wind. Climb the ladder.
Pee into the wind.
Maybe not that one. But, like,
you know, I'm so, like, scared of peeing into the, like, wind. You
know, if you're scared.
Aversion therapy.
Yes, aversion therapy. Like, yeah, with spiders and stuff. So it's like, start the pub with the black,
yeah,
dog.
She's, in vivo she, exposure, she's, baby.
That makes her a good witch.
Yes, no, I can see. I see what you're saying. Yeah. Like, don't, yeah, fear the black dog. It's just a, yeah, pub. They do a great gammon. Yeah. Okay. Part of how Mary maintained an air of credibility was that she claimed to have these elder advisors, one of whom she named Mrs. Moore. So she would tell the customers that Mrs. Moore was overseeing all her practices and advising on all the potions, that the money, and that the money was mostly going to her. For Rebecca, she invented a brand new advisor that she called Mrs. Blythe. Mary claimed that Mrs. Blythe needed one of Rebecca's undergarments to be able to tell what was wrong with her.
Uh-oh.
No. Yeah. Mary turned
taken a turn.
If she's capable of putting eggs back up a chicken, I don't...
I feel like this might be Mr. Blythe has asked for that.
I know, I feel like... it all went a little bit 16 candles, didn't it? Mary's creepy teenage boy phase. So William sends a petticoat, which makes it kind of less sexy. You're like, well, that's a lot of fabric. she starts writing letters from Mrs. Blythe and mailing them from Scarborough, which instruct the Perrigos to do increasingly elaborate things to ward off the spirits, including pinning bags containing guinea notes and gold coins to their bedposts. And she sends the money to them and the bags. And she also instructs them to nail two horseshoes to the floor. After reading each letter from Mrs. Blythe, I even have giant font, but it just gets hard to read. After reading each letter from Mrs. Blythe, they were instructed to burn the letters. Then Mrs. Blythe starts asking them to send various items to help in Rebecca's healing. For instance, a set of bedclothes, a tea set with some tea and sugar.
It's like a generation game. Just a cuddly toy.
Color telly. Gonk.
And this poor couple just keeps sending whatever Mrs. Blythe asks for to Mary because she needs them. Like, what are we out of? Flour. We need flour. Send some. What do you want to make? Yeah. So she's ripping them off left, right, and center. Finally, Mrs. Blythe sends them a letter warning them that they are both going to fall ill and that Mary will be sending half a pound of honey with a recipe for a pudding that they must both eat. The instructions specify that they must make the pudding every day. They must not share it with anyone else. And if there's any left over, they should destroy it.
This is getting very Stephen King The Shining.
It's so, I know. Oh, it's
poison
creepy.
Pudding. Poison pudding.
Yeah.
Poison pudding. They got the Jenny. God.
It's weird, like, I would definitely still eat it. Like, 100%. 100%.
Oh, you will love this. And I thought of you when I typed this, Hannah. Because, so they make up the pudding, they follow the recipe, and William has a few bites, and he's like, no, I can't eat this. This is terrible. And Rebecca's like, eh, and she eats all of it. And And I was like, yeah. Hannah George.
Yeah. We've just like, after like we record, we'll tend to burn a pizza and no one will eat it and I will eat it. That's essentially where that comes from.
Yeah.
And I'm a greedy bitch.
I'm throwing you under a bus, but like I'm already under that bus binge eating, so it's fine. It's fine. Yeah, so poor Rebecca eats it all. Rebecca, what happens to Rebecca?
She dies.
She dies. Rebecca dies from all the poison pudding. But William gets ill, does not die, much to Mary's chagrin, and his doctor suspects that Rebecca was poisoned. Now, William is hesitant to believe this at first, of course. He doesn't want to admit that they've been swindled all this time, but he checks out the bags that are hanging from the bedposts. He opens them up, and he finds that the guinea notes and the gold coins have been replaced at some point with cabbage leaves and copper coins.
Ooh.
So at some point, when Mary was in the house, she took her money.
Wow.
And replaced it with cabbage. It must have been really smelly in there that they didn't notice. Like cabbage.
Well, you could blame it on the plague, so it's going to be smelly.
That smelly old plague. Creepy, right?
Yeah.
Very creepy. Especially because I'm speaking in this. So to get her arrested, William arranges a meeting with Mary under the pretense of needing a potion for himself. Mary agrees, and she shows up with a bottle of tonic, which contains oatmeal and arsenic. But William has a trick up his sleeve. He's only gone and brought Constable Driffold with him.
Hey!
Seriously! Yes. These are the facts of the case.
What's his name again?
Constable Driffold.
Yes!
I love William. Like, he's dumb enough to mail his wife's pants to a witch, but he's smart enough to pull off a sting operation.
He's got a line.
He's got a line. I love this.
I feel like Constable Driffold is just him, like, wearing a moustache. Hello, 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 Constable Driffold.
That's quite enough, Mary. Okay. Mary's arrested and she's charged immediately with the murder of Rebecca Perrigo, and she's tried in front of a judge, one Sir Simon LeBlanc.
Simon LeBlanc!
Do you remember that video they did? Her name is Rio.
Everything connects. I love it. In York Castle, this is where this went down. Okay, sleuthers, this is the end of our case, so I need you to really use your noggins. There were three main bits of evidence which led to Mary's conviction. I've given you all the details you need to come up with this. What were the three bits of evidence?
A cabbage.
Acid eggs.
Acid eggs. No acid eggs. Eggs were a separate thing.
The nighty? The arsenic.
Yes. Well, arsenic is what got her arrested. But what else? What else was suspicious? Hannah, what did you eat? What did you eat all of?
Oh, I ate all that pudding. was there bits of the pudding? She told them to destroy it and they didn't.
They didn't.
Ooh.
This was the main thing that got her convicted. There was still honey left in the Perrigo's house from the puddings, so they tested it and they discovered mercuric chloride, which was consistent with the symptoms William and Rebecca displayed, mercury poisoning, basically. Now, we talked about some letters.
They were meant to destroy the letters.
Oh, they didn't burn the letters.
They didn't burn them, they didn't.
Yes. This is really how detectives get trained. A little bit more. Come on, Angela. What did I say? They were meant to destroy them.
They didn't.
But they didn't, Jenny. Jenny, they did not.
They should have gone down for that.
So what did they do? What did they do to analyze these letters from Mrs. Blythe? Do you remember?
Handwriting experts.
Yes!
Yay!
Jenny and Claire.
And the woman in the audience. I just said, handwriting. And you're bloody right, okay. You're right.
You know, it takes a village to solve a crime that's already been solved. It's 300 some years old.
Was it just that her handwriting was consistent with the letters?
It was, yeah, so they looked at Mary's handwriting, they saw that Mrs. Blythe had the same handwriting. Also, do you remember where Mrs. Blythe was sending the letters from?
Is that Scarborough?
Yes.
Hey!
Was there a Mrs. Blythe in Scarborough, Jenny?
No!
No, there was not a Mrs. Blythe.
I genuinely...
They went through the yellow pages! pages. No. Phone book.
I'm a little bit worried Jenny genuinely thinks there's a job at the end of this.
I'm pitching a drama where a middle-aged stand-up female comic is also a copper. Solves crime. She's got some problems as well, obviously, because all telecoppers have. I've got problems with my minge.
I would watch that show.
I would.
Oh, I would. It's a very different take, because I was thinking of Fargo, and she's like, oh, carrying quite a load here. And like, it would be just like the British equivalent of that. I love that. Like, oh, my minge. Oh. I need half a day off.
Yeah. I'm just trying so hard to think of like a pun of a vagina and a TV show that's like, can anyone think of one? Like, and I can pretend I said it and we edit it out. Like, you know, like, oh, who is there? There's a touch of mint would be very nice.
Very well done.
It sounds like a beverage.
I've got one touch of mint. A bum, which would be Ballycus anal, which would be quite good. CSI my funny. Which one? CSI my funny.
We will accept CSI.
Okay, Amanda, I've just said. Oh, guys, what if it's CSI my fam? My arse. So I will cut this whole bit.
Right. Katie, you were right about the cabbage and all of the other things.
Yes.
Not just the cabbage. But yeah, they looked through Mary's stuff and they saw that she had swindled them out of all this stuff. So that was enough to convict her. Well done, you guys. You could have been the prosecutors.
Yay, we solved it.
Cheers. Cheers. Oh, just a quick fun fact. Sorry, because I got to do the wrap up. I got to tell you what happened. Mary's convicted and she's sentenced to hanging. She immediately cries and tries to get out of it. How? How does she get out of it? She doesn't, but she tries.
She cries.
She cries and says, yes, she says that she's pregnant. Oh my God, honorary drunk woman over there. Oh, yeah, she does, you're not allowed to
hang a pregnant woman.
Is she pregnant?
No.
I've definitely said I'm pregnant to get out of stuff.
Of course she wasn't pregnant.
100%.
I mean, had Jenny given her 500 quid? No. All right. So she's hung. Right, another crime solved. Woo, so that's okay, now we've come to the end. We have a listener crime that we were sent. God, I hope the person's actually here. Wouldn't that suck? Do we have somebody by the name of D in here? D. Hello.
Hey, guys.
Hi, D. You were like, I don't really want to do this anymore. Would you mind coming up and actually reading your crime? Yay.
So it was a few years ago. I was walking along the Thames path to work, and this kid cycles up to me holding a beer bottle like above his head and waves it at me and says, give me your money. So I said, yeah, sure. And I got my wallet out, and obviously there was no money in it because I was really poor. And so I said, I'm really sorry, I don't have any money. And he said, okay, give me your phone instead. And I said, yeah, okay, sure. Would it be okay if I took the SIM card out of it? And he said, okay, fine. And so I tried to get the SIM card out, and I couldn't. It was stuck. And I was like, I'm so sorry that I'm not doing this like deliberately. The SIM card is stuck. And he said, give it here. So I gave him the phone, and he tried to get it out. He couldn't get it out either. Like, he was like, okay. And then he said, sometimes it helps if you jiggle like a key under it. And so he gave it back to me. And I was like, oh, okay, great. So I got the key. And it still wouldn't come out. We were still stuck. And we were there, like, trying. Both of us were trying for, like, a minute to do it. And eventually some other people were walking down the Thames path coming towards us. And so he just said, oh, forget it. And, like,
The best crime story.
Wow. Oh, thank you, Dee. You have earned that gin. You know what the best part is? We're overrunning, but that
crime just solved it fucking self.
Yeah. That's like modern day raffles, isn't it? That's what raffles would have done.
Amazing. It solved itself. I feel like that's all we need.
Do you have a hot take on it, Jenny? What do you think?
Well, I just think he's a gentleman criminal. Lovely. What lovely matter. I say, I don't mind being mugged. If someone comes up and taps you on the shoulder and says, excuse me, darling. You know. I'm just going to take everything. But, you know, save you the SIM, as you say, SIM card. And, you know, a fiver to cheer yourself up later and all that. Do it nicely. If you're going to mug nicely.
Amen to that. Lesson. Yeah.
Amen. What a good note to end on. Jenny, oh, my God, you've been amazing. Thank you so much to Jenny and Claire.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Jenny. Just one last thing. Is there, what are you up to? Is there anything you'd like to plug?
Absolutely nothing. I'm massively unemployed at the moment. Why I can do fun things. Do you know, I haven't held a handheld microphone for so long. It's exhausting. I'd need a mic caddy these days. Okay. I have an over-the-ear myself. No, I'm writing a book. I'm in Purdah. I'm in book Purdah until about March. And then the novel should come out next. Ooh. Fifth novel, love, fifth.
Are you allowed to tell us the name?
No.
No. Okay.
All publishers right. Don't like it. They don't like it.
That's fine.
I'm working on it.
Is it called Mum Inns?
Now.
Absolutely would read.
No, that's not. That's just the dedication.
Thank you.
Jenny, thank you so much, and thanks to you guys. What a fun episode.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman with music by The Lion and the Wolf. You can follow us on Twitter at Drunk Women Pod and on Facebook and Instagram at Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. Also, if you've got a petty crime you want us to solve, then please write it in that review and we'll solve it. Thank you so much to Acast for hosting us, and thank you for listening.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.